stranded for 9 hours in the tarmac at Austin. And look what it started. I'm Paul Plagg, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature. I'm talking today with Kate Hanai. Kate, am I pronouncing your name right?
You are, perfectly.
We want to just jump right in and have you tell the story about how the Coalition for Airline Passengers Bill of Rights came about. Because if I understand correctly, you were one of those people who were stranded on an American Airlines flight back in December.
Yep, that's sure the case. And it came about sort of by happenstance in that I happened to be, stranded on an airliner for 9.5 hours on the tarmac in December on the 29th with my family. We were diverted out of Dallas-Fort Worth airspace into Austin, and were told it would be brief, and it wasn't brief. It was 9.5 hours, and witnessed a lot of horrifying events, and such as people being arrested on airplanes, ambulances going to airplanes to take care of people, hazmat being called to a plane where a dog defecated on people, and overhearing those flight transmissions, our pilot begging for a gate and being told that we could not have one. That was frustrating, but then the customer service issues that happened after that are what really caused the coalition to form. None of us gathered anyone's contact information immediately after this. We did see each other down at the baggage claim, and we even saw each other the next morning reboarding flights, which was a total fiasco and a mess for most of us, since they never acknowledged our flights as arriving flights in Austin. But, after I got to our destination, it took 57 hours for us to get from San Francisco to Mobile, Alabama. And once we got there, I started Googling our flight. And that's how I found some of the other passengers. And this was in a reaction to American Airlines not contacting us and letting us know if they would compensate us at all for the two nights that we had to pay for and many of the other expenses that we had along the way just trying to get to our destination and being told many things that were untrue by the airlines.
Well, let me interrupt you for just a moment,
sure.
Kate, and ask you, when you Googled your flight information, where did that go that you found other passengers? Were they blogging or what were they doing?
Yes, they were blogging. And oddly enough, I found, I got into my first blog, and it was this little blog out of Texas that's a tips and travel blog that this woman does, Anders Meanders. And I went in there and found another couple's contact information. And so I blogged for my first time and put my phone number and email address in the body of the blog so that anyone who may find that flight number and go there would find me and then contact me so I could talk to them. And then I also located a few major news articles that had started to come up over the next few days, one in the Wall Street Journal and the Dallas Morning News, where their names were mentioned and a few other people started to be mentioned. And then I located them. And not necessarily through the people that authored the articles, but just by finding them. And there are a few blogs, Flyer Talk and a few other blogs, where people are pretty avid. And I found about 20 of our passengers in some of those blogs. And no one was really willing to gather the information. I was vociferously fighting already internally, trying to justify how something like this could happen to our family and ruin our vacation, and everyone else was feeling that way, but I was willing to gather the information and sort of follow through and get our congressman to write a letter, and they appreciated that and sort of designated me the spokesperson.
How long did it take to go from disgruntled passenger who had been treated poorly to head of the Coalition for Airline Passengers Bill of Rights? Did that happen overnight, or was it only after a week or two that you realized there was a need to have an organization here?
It was about, I would say, 2.5 weeks. I did my first national news program at 10 days after our flight, and the second one at 11 days. And then those started, then all of a sudden just everybody wanted to have me on the camera talking about what happened on December 29th. And our group felt that I was a good spokesperson. And then we had a conference call and determined that we needed to do something bigger. And so that's when we came up with the idea for a passenger bill of rights and to form the coalition. And I want to say that was at the longest 3 weeks. I know that we started the blog at about 1 month after our flight, and we found a free blog site and a free petition site and started those two things. And I made my first trip ever to Washington, D.C. 1 month after the flight and started lobbying Congress.
Well, now, the number of people involved in the Coalition for Airline Passengers Bill of Rights has snowballed in an amazing way.
Yes.
I mean, you started out with 20 people within a few days after that flight. How many members do you have now?
We have 15,106 when I looked today.
Wow.
And we had 3,500 the day JetBlue happened. And within 1 week from JetBlue happening, we had 12,000. So that particular incident had a huge impact. And then since then, there have been a number of stranding incidents, almost one major stranding incident every 2 weeks. And so every time one happens, we gather members. And also, the members are very involved. They come to Washington with me. I have no time to myself anymore. And I'm not complaining when I say that, but I've made myself available for every one of our members to call me personally if something was going on. Anyone in the general public that's stuck on an aircraft can call me or text me, email me, and I will return their email very shortly, unless I'm on a plane.
Right.
I can't. Unless I have to have my electronics turned off for some reason, I will respond to them immediately. And it's just super how this has blossomed. And I formed a nonprofit, a lobbying nonprofit called a 501c4, so that we could take donations. And I'm learning about how to do this because I was a real estate broker. I still am a real estate broker, but I haven't been able to work since I took on this cause. So it's been a real labor of love. And I just got back from D.C., and Senator Barbara Boxer and Olympia Snowe have been fighting for legislation. It has been an absolutely remarkable experience, and my family is very proud, and my community is very proud that I've taken something like this on.
Well, tell us about your big week that just wrapped up, because you've actually gotten to the point in just a few months that some organizations struggle for years to reach, and that is the fact that, you know, your goals are actually finding their way into legislation already.
You know, I guess that's true, and since I have never done anything like this, I'm kind of an instant gratification person. I have been very demanding and unwilling to accept anything other than let's get this done. And we're not going to go away. I don't know if you know that Dan Hicks song, How Can I Miss You When You Won't Go Away?
Right.
I have been right there in their face. I have had many, many coalition members showing up at Capitol Hill saying enough is enough, and writing and emailing and calling their members of Congress. And we've really organized as quickly as we can. And with the internet too, it makes it, you know, a lot faster, I think, than it used to be.
Well, you have a very cute website, by the way. We should direct our listeners to www.flyersrights.com. That's FLYERS rights.com. And the artwork in particular made me laugh when I first went there, because it looks very much like it could have been done by the artist who did the little cartoon people on the emergency instruction card in the back seat pouch.
Yes, that's exactly right. And we patterned it after that. And within a couple weeks, it'll be even more fun when our flash is installed. But even now with the HTML, it's really a wonderful site. We've only had it up for about a week, so we're very excited about it. We would love to direct people there. It also will give them all the information that they need about what we're doing and how to contact us. We'll send people free business cards that if they're stranded on an aircraft, they can hand out. A lot of people have said, give us business cards and we'll hand them out if we're stranded. And instructions for what to do if they're stranded, so that they know how to react and what to do, so that we can get the word out. Because frankly, when you're stranded, most people are thinking about getting off the plane and surviving. But the only way that we find out about them usually is through the media. And if you take photographs and note everything that's going on around you, it's very helpful. And a lot of people don't know to do that when they're in a situation like that.
We're going to take a brief break, Kate, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about some of the specific cases that have come to your attention. And just that, you know, how these things happen, because I have to think you probably learned quite a bit about that.
Yes. Well, it's very fascinating, and there are a few different ways that they happen, so that's a really great question.
Kate Hanai is with Coalition for Airline Passenger Bill of Rights. And we're going to come back and talk more about this problem and what Kate and her co-passengers are doing about it when we come back. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Okay, you got the license and now you're renting or even own a plane. Now what? Hi, I'm Tom Gresham, host of Wings to Adventure Television, and every week on the Outdoor Channel, we show you incredible places you can visit in your plane. Shot in spectacular high definition, Wings to Adventure captures cool planes, interesting people, and fly-in getaways you haven't heard of. Plus, we always have fun. There's more info at wingstoadventure.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack. With me today is Kate Hennai, who is... Now, what is your position? Are you the... You are the founder of the Coalition for Airline Passengers Bill of Rights. Have you gotten big enough to need a title yet?
Well, I unfortunately, yes. No, very fortunately, yes. I actually had to take a title when I formed the nonprofit.
Ah,
so
yes.
I am the president and a spokesperson, and most people refer to me as the founder, which is also the truth. And the other truth is that I'm the chief cook and bottle washer. So I have a lot of hats that I'm wearing for the coalition, which, as we organize, are getting delegated. But, yes, my official title is president.
Well, now let me ask you about how things unfolded after that fateful December 29th last year. You were stuck on that plane for 9 hours with a bunch of other passengers, and the diversion of American flights to Austin apparently is not uncommon. So it was not surprising that it happened to others as well. But since then, we heard American respond by saying, no, wait a minute, we don't need legislation for this. We're going to institute a new policy where it's not going to get past 4 hours or heads will roll or whatever they said. But that
right.
has turned out to be
false.
Just a guideline.
Yes, exactly right. Thank you. I'm glad that you knew that. It was a shock to me. On April 24th, when they stranded 13 more jets, and I was aware of it because people were texting me, they were calling, they were emailing and saying I was stranded last night for 8 hours. So I'm calling the media and saying, you know, get a hold of American Airlines and find out what happened. And they were calling American, and American denied it. And, you know, I'm not sure if they actually came out and said it didn't happen or if they just said we cannot confirm
right.
that any flight sat.
It's our planes, but we can't confirm that this is true.
Correct. And so what actually happened is that I was on the phone with Scott Macy from the Department of Transportation, who's investigating our flight from December 29th, which is also a little disconcerting because they are only investigating one plane from my incident, which is my plane.
Mm-hmm.
And there were many other serious events that happened on other planes. So I have a concern about that the government's only interested in one out of 121 planes. And all of the flights I'm aware of regarding American Airlines diversions have been diversions. They've been coming out of one airspace and put down in another airport where they're not supposed to be. And the government does not gather statistics for time on the tarmac for diversions. They don't require the airlines to report it. So it's like we're lost in space.
Hmm.
And that's a huge concern. And I testified to that before the Senate and the House that we had discovered this huge problem with the statistical reporting and that the government's putting out only 36 planes sat for last year, only 5 hours on the tarmac prior to takeoff. Well, what about the dearly departed flights like ours?
Right.
That, you know, left and then it just appears on the flight tracking record like we were in the air for 30 hours, which of course we weren't,
mm-hmm.
but that's how it looks on the tracking records for Americans. So, we're very concerned about this, and we're fighting very hard. I found out today that the Department of Transportation has called for a hearing on the 20th of June around this issue, and it looks like they're going to try to institute a rule. American Airlines finally admitted, when cornered by the Department of Transportation, that they had 13 jets that sat on the tarmac for more than 4 hours. and they told the press that. But that's the kind of pressure that it's taking to have honesty. And that's when they said, oh, no, it wasn't really a commitment to the general public that we would only hold them for 4 hours. It was actually just an internal operational guideline. So as the public, the flying public, we can't count on anything other than legislation at this point, in my opinion, and in the coalition's opinion, that will really make a difference. Because what the airlines say, they can take away.
Let's talk about what you really are, your expectations are in this matter, because weather is always going to happen. Diversions are always going to be necessary. If I read you correctly, you are after the airlines for things which you believe are within their control and they say are not. Now, if I can play devil's advocate for just a moment, at a lot of airports, especially busy airports, if your jetliner is in line for departure and things are being held up, if you head back to the terminal to deplane your passengers, or those passengers who say they want to be deplaned, that plane loses its sequence for departure. And I think what some of the airlines have said in some cases is that the government and the FAA and the way airports and the airspace are managed is a big contributor to this thing where they can't really go anywhere and they can't just let people run loose on the airport because that would be horrendously dangerous. What have you found out through your investigation into this problem, and where does the fault really lie in these strandings?
Well, there are a couple of different kinds of strandings that happen. You can have strandings prior to takeoff. You can have strandings after you land at the airport where you're going to actually disembark. Or you can have a diversion. So you've got three different issues to deal with. Now, in the case of JetBlue, those were prior to takeoff. And those were also flight cancellations. They said they were glued to the tarmac, so I've got to believe that, right? They maybe could not get back to a gate any sooner, but they could have sent out buses and provisions for those planes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our premise regarding that type of situation, and we do have that written into the legislation.
Okay, now, if I can interrupt you here for just a second, but again, playing devil's advocate, this means now that JetBlue has to maintain a fleet of buses?
No, they already have the Port Authority there. JFK already has the Port Authority there, and they did call them out eventually. They should have called them out sooner.
Okay.
So they already had a strategy in place. They just didn't use it. And that's very unfortunate. In fact, the Port Authority said they weren't even aware of it because JetBlue didn't call them in time.
Mm-hmm.
So they already have the ability to service the planes. They just aren't doing it. In the case of our flights, we kept being we were diverted and put down into, there were 121 planes put down into different airports, and there was a management decision at American Airlines that determined that that would happen. Also, just so you're aware of it, all of our flights, with the exception of two out of 121, were told that we were not going anywhere. We were not flying that night, and yet they continued to hold us. In the case of our plane, we were told at the end of the third hour that we weren't going anywhere, and we were held another six-plus hours. So that's just wrong. I mean, there was no intention for them ever to take us to a gate. Our pilot finally said, I may lose my job, but I'm taking us to a gate, because he was afraid of tarmac rage erupting, and we were witnessing it on other flights. So it was very serious. Now, those are diversions, and then you have the possibility of a plane taking off and landing at an airport and not being able to get to a gate. In any one of those situations, if there's no way to get to a gate, truly, there's no reason why they can't come out and service a plane and bring food, water, and medicines. If a diabetic needs medicine, or if somebody is without, you know, or if somebody has to get off the plane, if they suffer from blood clots or some issue where it's truly a health risk, paraplegics. There was a diabetic paraplegic on one of our flights that they tried to take off the plane on the tarmac, and they couldn't get him off. And that was one of the two planes I just referred to that was actually allowed to go to a gate.
Right.
And they sat on the tarmac 7.5 hours, but it was still very dangerous for him, and we don't know what happened to him, but he was a diabetic paraplegic who went into shock. So you've got people with different health-related issues or even emotional-related issues that can't tolerate sitting that long for a variety of reasons, and they must have their needs met. If it's an act of God situation or truly a reason why the plane can't get to a gate, they must either have the resources on the plane, emergency rations of some sort on the plane, to be able to help people, or they must be able to take things out to the plane. They just have to have a strategy for that. Or they shouldn't be taking planes off if they know there are storms coming. Like
right.
JetBlue canceled the flights. That I admired a lot.
Is there a big difference in the way different airlines handle this? Because actually, when David Neeleman went to the lengths he went to, I got the impression that he really was genuinely sorry that this has happened. And he went to the extent of going on late night TV where they had pilloried him to address these things. And eventually, you know, he's no longer CEO of the company.
And honestly, I'm sick about it. When I heard that he was forced to step down, I could not believe it. He was the only CEO that stepped up to the plate, apologized, and did the right thing.
And spent a lot of millions of dollars actually compensating passengers.
That's correct. And Barbara Boxer wrote a letter yesterday that she sent out to the ATA, and she sent one specific letter to American Airlines asking what their plans would look like if they could choose a number of hours that they would want to hold passengers before disembarkment, what would work for them. She specifically sent one to American Airlines, and then the rest of them she counted on ATA, but she excluded JetBlue because they already have a plan.
Right.
And because they've stuck to their plan so far. And they lost a lot of money in sticking to their plan. I got that, but they didn't strand passengers on a weekend when a lot of other airlines ended up stranding passengers. So they did the right thing. And I admired it a lot. I was very saddened that he had to step down. I think he did the right thing.
Well, now, there are some other airlines which have not been as forthright about this. Shall we name names?
Sure. American Airlines is one of them. And I know that they think I've targeted them like some kind of conspiracy. But the fact is, since December 29th, they've had four major stranding incidents. They have they actually have a strategy of diverting, telling every one of their flights that there's no hotels available and no rental cars available, and in San Antonio in particular, having the American Red Cross look after the stranding people when there are hotels available so that they don't have to deal with those customer service issues. So, and that particular company has not stepped forward even when asked by Congress over and over to step forward and come up with some kind of a plan that they're willing to guarantee the public. So, and I don't know if you're aware of it, but a week or so ago, after April 24th, they stranded a jet out of Miami. They put it down in Palm Beach, and there were three ambulances called to that jet.
Oh, yeah, that was the one that was involved in the customs deal where they got to Palm Beach after the office had closed.
Yes, coming out of Port-au-Prince.
And the Border Protection people said that they could have made arrangements, but nobody ever called them to come.
Right. Yeah, they said they forgot about the plane being out there, quite frankly. And actually, we were told, I've been told, we've got some American Airlines employees that have signed our petition and that are part of our coalition. And they said, frankly, on the night of December 29th, they forgot about our jets being out on the tarmac. That's pretty horrifying as a passenger to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what, Kate? I have to tell you that philosophically, I come from a place where I would prefer to see this done with contract of carriage or other private sector solutions, but I have to begrudgingly admit that this may be one of those cases where new laws may be the only answer.
Yes. I actually come from the same place, and I kept wishing that the other airlines would step up to the plate and come up with their own Bill of Rights like JetBlue did and really incorporate it in their contract of carriage. American, when they came out with their four-hour rule, never incorporated it. And then when something did happen, they were able to say, oh, no, it wasn't a rule. It was just an internal operational guideline. So, and that's what's been happening since 99, ever since they agreed to adopt those 12 rules. So it's just a matter of trust. It's a matter of, you know, how much can we trust them? Honestly, as a real estate broker, if I were to take someone in my car up into a driveway and sit there with them for 9 hours in the driveway with the doors locked and not let them out, you know, have it set up so that they couldn't get out and not feed them and not water them and tell them that they were going to get in the house, but I couldn't tell them when. I'd be in jail. I'd be licenseless, and the market would take care of it. But in this case, unfortunately, and I read an article yesterday. Now, this didn't happen domestically, but there was a United Airlines jet was put down in Australia, and the crew got off the jet, and the passengers were left on the jet.
Oh, they were told that. Yeah, they were told it would be 9 hours because the crew hadn't had enough rest.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And so 20 hours they spent on the plane, which, you know, that's too long.
For me. Well, Kate, listen, we need to get you back fairly frequently while this thing plays out, because it's a tremendous story. It affects so many people. And frankly, I'm just in awe of how much you've accomplished in just 6 months.
Well, thank you. And I think it's four and a half months.
Well,
actually.
Yeah, actually, you're right.
And I guess it is awe-inspiring. I'm so tired right now from flying back and forth. It's hard to keep my eyes open. But I'm hopeful that what we come up with in Congress is meaningful legislation, and that it really makes a difference for people. I'm also very hopeful that it doesn't have a profound economic effect on the airlines, that there's a way to constructively do this that protects people and also has the airlines be able to have profits. I'd like to see them be profitable.
Well, Kate, we really appreciate you taking a few minutes out of a very busy day for you, and please keep us posted.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And let's have people go to Flyers Rights and sign the petition. And if they have any questions, they can call me.
Kate Hanai is the founder and now president of Coalition for an Airline Passengers Bill of Rights. If you want to call her, you'll find her contact info on the group's website at www.flyersrights.com. That's F-L-Y-E-R-S, rights.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at Aero, that's aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.